Welcome to episode number 32 of Become a Guitarist Today with myself, Adam Roach. In this episode, I talk to Jamie Humphreys, who played with the Brian May Band and also toured with Henry Rollins plus lots of other musicals, including Champions of Rock and We Will Rock You. He also tells us some great stories, how he first got the job with Brian May and performed with Queen as well. Also, his time recording and jamming with Richie Kotzen. Now, Jamie is also a writer for the Guitar Interactive magazine. He started about 20 years ago when it was called Lick Library. So Jamie also gives us an idea of what it's like to actually be a writer for the magazine and the amount of time that goes behind each issue with recording, writing, tabbing things out, researching different artists. There's a lot involved, just like a podcast, really. So before we get into the interview, I'd like to say congratulations to my newest member on Guitar Lessons with Adam Roach closed Facebook group. So the winner of last week's competition goes to Auntie. So congratulations, Auntie. We'll see you over at the closed Facebook group with the guitar lessons with myself. So for anyone else interested in getting the lessons, you can get access for the closed Facebook group for free for 1 month, just so you can try it out and just see if it is the type of thing you're looking for. So don't forget, there's lots of videos, techniques and tips to help you out. So yeah, go on over, have a look. Send me an email saying that you'd like to join up and I'll hook you up to the page. So all the songs you hear in this podcast are from one of Jamie's albums, including the intro, the song called Fubar. Other songs you'll hear in this podcast are his songs called Ceremony, From Scratch, I Get By, and the Nashville song. So if you are interested in hearing more of Jamie's playing, click on the link in the notes below where you can find out more about his playing and what he's up to. So let's go over to the interview now with Jamie Humphreys. Start off the interview by finding out exactly what he's up to at the moment. So who are you on tour with at the moment?
It's called the Symphonic Rhapsody of Queen.
Okay.
And it's an orchestra, a small size, a moderate sized orchestra, and obviously a band, and then they have guest singers. There's some Swedish singers, there's some Spanish singers, and it's a nice little production. I've made it sound apparently more Queen-like than it sounded before,
okay,
which is pretty good.
Ah, interesting. Yeah, is it a new production or has it been around for a while?
Well, I think that this company's been running this production and other productions. They do a Symphonic Floyd. They do this History of Rock. I think they've been going for quite a few years, and these shows, I think this Queen runs one has run a few years. I know a couple of the singers that have done this. There was a lady, Patty. I played with her at Freddie Mercury's 65th birthday when I played with Queen. Mm. She was one of the guests on that, but she sings with Meatloaf, and she did We Will Rock You Las Vegas.
Okay.
So we met when we did the Queen gig, and then I saw that she did the Symphonic Queen last year. So, they're not a particularly big company, but you know, they're medium kind of size venues, 1,000, 2,000, 3,000 seaters. They're not massive, but it's work that keeps the wolves from the door between the bigger tours.
Mm.
It's nice to have something else come in, kind of thing, is you know what I'm getting at.
Yeah, for sure. So how did you get your first connection with Brian May?
My first connection with the Queen show, which led to that connection with Brian, would have been in 2006, 2007. I had a really good day. I had a day where I got up one morning when I was still living in England, and I checked my email, and it was an email from a gentleman who said, "Hi, my name's Neil Murray, bass player of Whitesnake and Black Sabbath." And I was like, "Ah, you're Neil Murray." So Neil said that he played on We Will Rock You London, and they needed a new guitar player as a sub, as a dep, someone to cover days off, you know, because they were on these shows so much. And would I be willing to come up with? They said that they put classic rock, and they needed someone who was reasonably schooled in terms of having the discipline of working, say, with a conductor and being able to maybe read color charts and read scores and stuff, but they also needed someone who could play rock convincingly. Mm. And they'd seen my lick library videos that get put on YouTube. And so I was like, ah, okay, this is interesting. So I wrote back and said, yeah, this would be great. I'd love to come in. And then I went up to the kitchen. I'll never forget this. I went up to the kitchen to make a cup of tea, and my friend, Dave Kilminster, who plays for Roger Waters, texted me and said, check your email. I said, he said, check your email now. There's something really cool. And I was like, how did you know that Neil Murray messaged me? He was like, what? Check your email, you know. And I was like, oh. So I went back downstairs and checked my email. And I had another email from another company asking if I was willing to take over the role as a guitar player in the Australian Pink Floyd show.
Yeah.
Playing an American tour. So it was like, oh, crap, you know, it's one day and you've got these two offers. So anyway, to answer the question, original question, I did the Australian Pink Floyd show. I came back from that and I became a sub on We Will Rock You in London. And I did that on and off. Sometimes it was very busy, sometimes it wasn't. And I got friendly with one of the singers there, Peter Johansson, a Swedish guy who ended up going back to Sweden. Then I had a call from my friend, who's my old guitar teacher, Phil Hilborn, who also was a sub on We Will Rock You. And he said, oh, Peter Johansson's doing this. He's doing some concerts. They're calling this show Champions of Rock. It's like Music of Queen. It's in Sweden. I put you forward for the other guitar. I'm doing it. I suggested you'd be good. We could do it together. Yeah. So we went out and did a couple of gigs. Two gigs turned into, I think, four gigs and a live album, because the venue, it was like a 2,000-seater theatre thing, and it sold out four or five times. I think we played a whole weekend. And I met this girl singer on there called Kerry Ellis. And I knew, I'd heard of Kerry because I knew she was making an album with Brian. And I knew that she did We Will Rock You and that she was a bit of a musical theatre person. I'm not from a musical theatre background, and I have no interest in musical theatre whatsoever. It was just that We Will Rock You is the Queen. Not disrespecting musical theatre, it's just not for me.
Yeah.
So, but We Will Rock You was obviously it's a challenging show for a guitar player, and also it's a very fun show to play. So anyway, I did the show and didn't think anything of it. And then we got a call a few months later, Champions of Rock is now doing a tour and we'd like you to come to Sweden. So we all got booked up, and Kerry was the singer on the tour, the guest singer, one of the big names. And I don't know, we just got on well and had a good rapport on stage. Didn't think anything else about it. And then I was driving home from the academy where I used to teach in Guildford one day, and my phone pinged and it was Kerry. And she was like, oh, what are you doing on September, the whatever it was? And I was like, nothing. I don't think. Why? What's up? She said, oh, I've got a gig. Are you interested? And I said, yeah, sure. What is it, Kerry? And she went, I was with Brian May at Hyde Park. Okay. All right. Yeah. And I kind of thought, it can't be right. So didn't hear anything, nothing. Months went past, and I was in the summer, and my phone in my home rang, and I picked the phone up, and it was a lady from Brian's company, and she said that they'd heard of me through Kerry. And they were promoting Kerry's new album, Anthems, that she'd done with Brian May. And Brian needed a second guitarist, and would I be interested? So I obviously said yes. And they asked me when I was next in We Will Rock You. And I said, well, actually, I'd been booked to cover a whole week next week. I mean, every day, every show. So I went into the gig and sort of was a bit bubbling with excitement, and a few people had heard rumours, are you auditioning for Brian's band? I was like, oh, yeah, you know. And then the MD said over the like, he has a phone that he talks to the band. He said, just to let you all know, the governor's coming in tomorrow, and he's going to come in and watch the show, so everyone in their best behaviour. And I looked around to the others, and I said, I wonder if he's coming to see me. And I just got shot down in a cloud of smoke. Don't be so stupid. Don't be an idiot. Of course he's not. And I thought, oh, yeah, made a right prat of myself. Anyway, got out the theatre, got on the tube, got back to Victoria Station, turn my phone on, ping. Hi, this is Sarah from Brian's company, Duck Productions, and Brian's going to come in specially to watch you play tomorrow. So I said, oh, okay, shit. So I was right. So the next day I went in for the matinee performance because it was the school holidays. So we did two shows a day. Went in and sitting at the bandstand a bit, kind of, okay, I've got to play these Queen songs. And Brian's going to be sitting in the box listening. And so I the MD just sort of said, okay, right, just relax, Jamie, do your thing, just play. Because everyone knew what he was there for.
Yeah.
So I said, okay, and played. And I've got to say, there was Laurie Wisefield from Tina Turner Band and from Wishbone Ash and the other guitar, Neil. And at the end of the first set, they were like, that's probably the best you've ever played this show. And I was like, okay, cool. And then the MD called and said, everyone, if you can all leave the bandstand, Jamie, could you just wait there? And I was sitting on the bandstand and I just heard this, is Jamie up here? And I thought, fucking Brian May. And up he walked and he was like, shook my hand. And I never forget this moment. This was a classic. Because obviously there are different types of Brian May guitars. There's the Burns Brian May. There's the Brian May, the special, the BMG. And then there's the Super, which is the expensive one. And so I've just got a BMG. I've got a green BMG I've had for years. And I'm sitting there with this guitar. And he's like, you have a very big sound. What guitar is that? And I went, well, it's one of yours, Brian. Like, and he went, well, I know that. And straight away, I think that broke the ice. And we both started laughing and we were playing. And he was like, oh, you use what gauge strings? These are really heavy strings. And just got chatting. And he was fiddling around on my guitar, playing some bits. And I'm just sort of standing there thinking, I remember being 5 years old, watching you in the Bohemian Rhapsody video and going, I want to do that. And so he looked up. He said, so would you like to join my band?
Wow.
And that was it.
Amazing.
Yeah, so a couple of weeks later, I got another email from his PA arranging, and I went up to his house for 2 days, and we sat there, and I've still got the recordings on my phone of me and him rehearsing together, playing the stuff, and then obviously, you know, showing me all these other guitars and all this Queen stuff, and it was, it was incredible. And then a few weeks later, we rehearsed, I think it was with the London Symphony Orchestra, and then we performed at the last night of the Proms. We were second from the top of the bill, and it was like, you know, 60,000-70,000 people in Hyde Park, and it was all over the TV. And you know, last week I was a Depp, a sub on We Will Rock You, and there I am playing We Are the Champions with all the cameras and all the flags, and it was like, okay, yeah, this I can deal with this. This is fun.
Incredible.
Yeah. So that's been it, and then we did a tour, a UK tour, and then I turned 40 during the tour, and was going to have a birthday party. Kerry actually said, you've got to have a party. So I said, yeah, okay. So I organised a party. My brother was going to organise it for me. And then Brian, just one day in catering, said, oh, are you having a birthday party? I said, oh, yeah. He said, well, can I come? I'm like, really? I said, well, of course, Brian. I didn't think you'd want to, you know, come down to my birthday. I said, we're going to play. And he said, well, I won't play Queen songs at your birthday, but I'll play Beatles songs or Shadow. I said, all right. Yeah. So I phoned my brother. I said, look, you're going to have to tell this squash club. It was his squash club or something. I said, you're going to tell them that that Brian's probably going to come. And everyone's got to be cool. You can't go thumbing the local paper and getting some dodgy little newspaper to take a picture. You know, just be normal. So we arranged it all and the party, and I was about to get it all going. And then I got an email saying, oh, we know it's your birthday, but we've been offered a gig. It was the Festival of Speed, at Goodwood. It was the big race car thing. Mm. And we know it's your 40th birthday that weekend. Sadly, Brian can't make it to your party. And we understand you're having your birthday, so we understand if you don't want to do it. Do you want us to find another guitarist? I was like, no, I'm not letting in. So I said, no. So we cancelled my birthday party, and I drove up on my 40th birthday to his house, and he walked in. I couldn't find anyone. Walked around the back of the house, as I always did, went through the doors, and you know, there was a party, you know, dinner laid on, and we had a bit of a celebration. And he was like, right, we better get to work. Let's go and make a cup of tea. And we go out in the kitchen, and he's like, so, Jamie, I need to talk to you. How would you feel about doing a gig with Queen? And I'm like, really? On my birthday? This is just too much. So, and I did one gig with Queen. I played, it was just a small gig, but it was still happened, and it was at the Savoy Hotel in London. Mm. It was for Freddie's 60th, what would have been his 65th birthday. It was like a royal family, celebrity audience. You know, to raise money for the AIDS Foundation thing.
Yeah.
And we had various guest artists joining us on stage. Mike Rutherford from Genesis played bass with us.
Yeah.
And Jeff Beck played guitar with us.
Wow.
We had various singers. And one of the main singers was a guy, Tom Chaplin from the band Keane. So it was a fantastic, memorable gig. It was, and then sadly, as quick as it all started, it finished.
Yeah.
So, Brian, 1 minute you're doing it, and the next minute, Brian, I got a call about being on standby for the MTV Awards when they did it with Lady Gaga. Mm. And he said, the management want me to go back to one guitar, but, if it doesn't work out, then you're the guy that I want to call. And so I was sitting there the whole week that I knew that it was approaching the MTV Awards in Ireland. And a couple of days later, I had an envelope for the door, and it had Brian's company name. I was like, oh, what's this? And I opened it up, and it was all this beautiful cartoon artwork for Star Wars, because I'm a big Star Wars fan, from Japan. Mm. Sent me this gift of all. And then I went, I didn't get the gig, did I? And that's it. So, and from now on, he's done Queen as one guitar, and he does the thing with Kerry, but it's piano and guitar, and so but it was good, and we still have a great relationship. He puts me up for We Will Rock You. I did We Will Rock You Germany on and off for 4 years, and then last year, because I moved to Sweden a few years ago, because I met my fiance and have a family there now, and it's a nice place to live, so I go between Sweden and England. And he put me forward. Well, he didn't put me forward. He gave me the job of We Will Rock You Denmark last year. So I still have a lot of contact. I was at Queen in Stockholm just before Christmas. We hung out, and he's a bit of a mentor. He's a huge influence on me, and has done things for my career that I could never really imagine.
So when you did the solo band with Brian May, was that what material was that? Was that his other? Was that Queen material, or did he hear other songs?
What it was the first time, the stuff that I did on Hyde Park was very much promoting the Brian and Kerry's first album, which is called Anthems. So there was a lot of songs that they'd done. We played pretty much with the album, but then we did various Queen songs in there. We Are the Champions, We Will Rock You, Tie Your Mother Down. I remember, because I use my Music Man guitars, I've been with these for years, I always have a dual output on them, so I have a piezo bridge on these guitars, and because there was a couple of songs, No One But You and another song, I can't remember what it was, and I played them acoustic, so I was using the piezo system, and one day I was sound checking, and Brian came on stage and just stood over with me, and the sound engineer monitor guy was like, oh, there's test your piezo, and I flipped the switch, and I just played Crazy Little Thing Called Love, and he was like, how are you doing that? And I said, it's got a piezo, because now I don't know whether it inspired him, but he's now got a Red Special with a piezo on it.
Ah.
I don't know, we probably didn't, but I like to think maybe that conversation, and he was like, that sounds incredible. We're going to do Crazy Little Thing Called Love tonight. And so from that point on, he used to do it. He used to kind of point at me, and I'd start the track on the piezo guitar on the Music Man.
Okay.
And then we'd be in sound check, and we'd start playing, classic Queen songs, and we'd all be jamming them and play Bohemian Rhapsody with him a few times, but we never did it on the gigs. But then when we did the thing at I've just remembered another thing actually. There was a We Will Rock You 2. There's a sequel that never came out, and he asked me to do that. So we did two performances, which that was great fun because we only workshopped it, which it was just a rough performance with a invited audience and Brian's kind of, Brian's friends. You got these famous actors and people like, I've seen you on the telly. It's quite weird. But we did a show in London in like a theatre school or something. And because it was not it was just a workshopping stage, I got an email from Brian's people, he'd like to hire you for a couple of weeks. And it was really nice because I was the only guitarist on it. Brian didn't play, but I spent a week in the studio with Brian doing the parts together. So really, like Bicycle Race and stuff and Invisible Man and there was other tunes that we'd Friends Will Be Friends, the stuff that we didn't do on We Will Rock You. So I'd be, what shall I do here, Brian? And he'd take the guitar and he'd be like, oh, I did it like this. So you're having a guitar lesson with him and he's teaching you. He'd always say to me, I'd be playing something, he'd be like, what are you doing there? I said, well, I'm doing this. He said, no, it's too complicated. Remember, if I played it, it's easy. And he's a very creative, inventive guy. We did the Goodwood gig, the Festival of Speed, and that was billed as the Brian May Band. And we did some stuff off of Back to the Light, which was really good. We did Driven by You. I've actually got a video that was on TV. It was on Sky Sports of us doing Driven by You, and it sounded fantastic. And we were on the back of an American truck. Brian pulled in like this hot rod truck, standing in the back, and they've got monitor wedges under the back of this truck. It was really cool. So and then the Queen gig, that was all Queen, apart from, we did things like Days of Our Lives, Tie Your Mother Down. Remember doing Tie Your Mother Down with Brian on one side and Jeff Beck the other, the trading solos. It was just, I'm playing an A chord, and it was the best A chord I've ever played in my life. I'm just the rhythm guy. I have a true story actually about Jeff Beck, because I was so nervous about meeting Jeff Beck. And because when I played, this is the other thing, you go from doing, playing on the theatre show or, other gigs I did where there were guitar techs and stuff. But then when I did the gig with Brian, and the Queen gig, my guitar tech was Steve Pryor, and Steve Pryor was like Jeff Beck's tech, and he'd also tech for Gilmore. And you've got this guy who's the bands he worked for, and so he sort of told me, Steve was like, obviously when Jeff comes in, I'm gonna have to put my attentions a bit more into Jeff than, I was like, man, I totally understand. He was the kind of guy you go for lunch and you come back and he'd gone through your old shitty case that you'd used on pub gigs for years and all your cables have been fixed. I was like, Steve, what have you done? He said, you've got a load of crap cables, so I've mended them all for you. I'm like, you didn't have to do it. He was just amazing, this guy. And we were doing a gig and they were doing Tie Your Mother Down and they were like trading solos. And I'm playing like this riff. That's it. And just grinning, from ear to ear. And all of a sudden my gain disappeared and Jeff Beck had turned my little EP booster off. And so I carried on playing and I sort of looked at him. I thought, so I turned it back on because all my overdrives all went. So he's playing away and then his foot comes and he stamps on my board again. And I'm like, oh my God, my sound is just gone. Is he upset with me? Have I upset Jeff Beck? Am I too this? So I thought, and I turned it on again. And all of a sudden he went like that and his foot hovered and I looked at him and he looked at me and then he looked at his own pedal board and turned his own pedal board, looked at me, grinned and rolled his eyes. He got pedal boards muddled up.
Oh, no.
So he thought he was stepping on his Klon, like 50 million pound pedal, but he kept leaning over and pissed because our boards were right and they were like wah-wah, booster, and chorus, but they were kind of the same. And it was the way he went, hovered, and he looked at me, and he just put this grin and rolled his eyes and started laughing. So that is that's a true story.
That's
very funny. But for me to have 1 minute been just doing some pretty cool gigs, but doing theatre show and working in a DVD place, to all of a sudden these guys that you sort of transcribe their stuff for guitar magazines to actually be they're doing it was it was pretty cool.
Yeah. So did you pretty much grow up on Queen music? Was that your main influence?
It was one of the reasons why I started was Queen.
Yeah.
I have a rock dad, so it was his record collection. And as far as I can remember, they got old, like Super 8 cine film of me at like 2 years old, holding onto one of those Dansett record players where the records dropped down.
Yeah.
And into my dad's Beatles and Elvis collection, and so I listened to there was Queen and Led Zeppelin and Joe Walsh and some weird bands like Focus and Jan Ackerman and also I was quite into he got me into Pink Floyd, and Pink Floyd was a massive part of my influence or my inspiration for guitar. But the biggest one was Carlos Santana.
Okay.
My dad, as far as I can remember, my dad listened to Santana, and I went to my first concert in 1979, 1980. I was like 8 or 9. And my dad took me to a rock concert, and we went and saw Santana at the Royal Albert Hall. I still have the concert program that's signed. I met Santana after the gig, or before the gig, actually. He came on, he was like tweaking his gear. My dad, like, that's Carlos Santana. I run down to the front with my dad. We did actually, in Guitar Interactive, we did a thing recently. I did a Santana style, and we laid out my old concert programs and tickets from there, and that concert program is there. It's actually in the magazine. We took photos of it. So my grandfather, actually, because back then Santana was still using Yamaha SGs, and my first decent guitar, I had an electric guitar really young. I had one that we borrowed from my brother's friend, like a 335 copy, a Honer or something. It was a piece of shit, but it was something that you could plug in, and it had strings. And and then I think it was about 10, and my dad got me a K Les Paul, and I used to use that, and really high string action. But I've still got it, actually. I'm a bit of a hoarder for gear. And then eventually my granddad, when I was about 13, he took me to London, because I was really getting into it then, and he bought me a Yamaha SG that I still have from like the very early 80s, and so that was my big Santana thing. But then I got a paper round, and I remember going into the news agents to get my wages, and because they used to drop the papers off in those days at the front door, and then you get your papers in your bag and off you go. And on the Saturday you go in after you've done your round to collect your money, and I went in there, and there was a magazine. It's a Guitarist. And I remember taking like a pound or something out of my £4 week wages and bought this magazine. And that really exposed me to Steve Vai and Frank Zappa's band. I didn't know who he was. I listened to him, but I started reading about these other guys. And so that was kind of the start. But a big influence on me was Francis Dunnery from the band It Bites. He was kind of similar, but you could hear Holdsworth, although he wasn't, technically savvy as Holdsworth was. It's kind of those outside legato things. So I really gravitated to that.
Yeah.
I was a big Marillion fan. I was very much into Stephen Rothery, massive Genesis, early Genesis. So I was really into progressive rock. And then I started hanging out with this guy when I was about 14 or 15. He introduced me to Van Halen. I'd heard Beat It, obviously, and Jump. but he introduced me to Van Halen One and Blizzard of Oz.
Yep.
And that was it. And and then a couple of years later, Surfing with the Alien, 1987. Yeah, Not This Earth, 1986. And Yngwie Malmsteen. It's funny because I got into Yngwie Malmsteen, I think, before I got into Van Halen, because I've got Trilogy on vinyl when it came out. I'd read about it. So yeah, the kind of usual stuff. But I started off, I think, more of a classic rock. The Santana thing was a big thing.
Yep.
Eric Clapton. And then it was into bands like It Bites that were slightly pop and progressive and Marillion. And yeah.
Mm.
And then once I discovered, you know, Not of This Earth and Van Halen, and I heard Blue Powder by Steve Vai, but it was on a flexible record. It was a Carvin Amps demo record. So this was years before Passion and Warfare came out. And then my friend had flexible on vinyl and flexible leftovers. And another album that really influenced me was Public Image Limited, which is John Lydon, Johnny Rotten from Sex Pistols.
Yeah.
But he had Steve Vai on guitar.
Oh, really?
Oh, man, that album. It's the one that's got a song called Rise. Get that album, dude. It's some of the best Steve Vai. It was after Frank Zappa, between Zappa and Dave Lee Roth. Oh man, Steve Vai it's kind of like an early sort of precursor to industrial metal, because you got this kind of really sort of alternative, like kind of, you know, punk-esque vocal thing going on and the production, but then you've got Steve Vai.
Wow.
And there's a song called Rise, which was the big single. I remember it being in the charts and not having a clue it was Steve Vai, but some of the, there's a track on there called Home. Oh man, that's a serious, that really inspired me, that album, and I listened to that a lot, a hell of a lot. It's a great album. And then all the usual, I got into a big thing, Jimi Hendrix, he was a big Hendrix fan, big Stevie Ray Vaughan fan, and then all the usual guys, but I think probably one of the other ones that had a big, Van Halen was a massive influence. I'd say really for me, Eddie Van Halen, Brian May, Dave Gilmour, and Ty Tabor from King's X. I just, you know, discovered King's X in 88 and was just blown away by him and his sound. Richie Kotzen, actually. I discovered Richie Kotzen very early. I got his first album in 89. No, that's a lie. For some reason, I bought the Bill and Ted's Bogus Journey soundtrack.
Yeah.
And there was a Kotzen song, and I'd always seen Richie Kotzen in magazines. I thought, oh, he looks kind of cool. And he was like 18. And then I got his instructional thing, and I wore that out. And when he joined Poison, and he did Electric Joy, which is probably one of my favorite guitar instrumental albums ever. I got that when it came out. And that was what made me swap over. I had a Telecaster that I still play. I didn't get rid of my Ibanez. I moved on to a Tele, and I then read an interview with him when he did a Native Tongue with Poison, and I went and saw him on that tour, and I got this Jerry Donahue Telecaster, and I had it customized and the same pickups put in as his custom shop one, to the point of where a few years later we became friends, and he came to my old house and recorded a solo on my album that I put out about 10 years ago, and he played it on that Telecaster that I'd designed or modified, this. And even when he picked it up, he was like, is this one of mine? I said, no, it's not. But I modeled it on, because it had a black scratch plate, not a white one. I modeled it on your custom shop one you had in Poison. I was like, no way. Yeah, you know, I'd read all the magazines and the articles on it. And it's quite funny, because then I gave him a Sharpie, and he turned it over and he graffitied all the back of the guitar for me, did all caricatures and stuff. Yeah. So I've got this Telecaster that was kind of the start of the kind of choices of guitars and things that moved away from, you know, I've still got my 80s Ibanez. I had a floral gem. But Kotzen was a massive influence. And it was quite a thing. You know, I got to play in a band with him a couple of times, and I did a lot of gigs with him back in early 2000. I did some stuff in America with him. go to all into his studio and stuff and hung out and we played together. So he that was quite a trip to sort of, again, one of your heroes that you looked up to when you 18 to actually end up, you know, doing shit with, which was pretty cool.
Yeah, well, actually, that leads into my next question about the Guitar Interactive magazine. Can you tell us about that?
Yeah.
What's your deal with that one?
This year is a very, very special year for me because it marks the 20th anniversary of me signing a contract with Music Man Guitars, and it also marks me becoming the second longest standing guitar player for Lick Library. I joined Lick Library when it was called Total Accuracy. The only other longest standing member of the team is Stuart Ball, who is part owner of the company. Mm. So I came in 98 and transcribed a lot of the Jam With books, Jam with Joe Satriani. I wrote all the score for that. Jam with Dire Straits, Jam with Radiohead, Jam with Buddy Holly, Jam with Thin Lizzy. Jam with Whitesnake. I did all these books and CD packages. And then that side of the business kind of died down a bit. And they came to me and said, look, we got this idea and we'd like to get you involved. It's going to be a bit of a hit and miss. Are you willing to try and do a DVD? And so me and Stuart did Classic Solos Volume 1. Mm. And it was one of the, it basically, this is quite a sweeping statement, but I think it pretty much changed a lot of how guitar tuition is done, because it was one of the first DVDs of its kind, and it's incredibly influential, and it sold so many copies. And that was us doing the vocal tab and teaching, and that DVD came out and it just went, and so that became the start of Lick Library. So Lick Library originally was just me and Stuart doing all the stuff. And not many people know this, you know, they see like Andy James and people have done it. Like Andy James, I got him his job. You know, he was in a guitar competition that I judged, and I said he should be the winner. And then I, you know, said, hey, come down to Lick Library, you know. Yeah. And a lot of these people came in after, but originally it was me and Stuart. Kim was the boss, is the boss, and Stuart's the boss. But Stuart was in more of the kind of the, you know, the ideas kind of side of products and things back then. And so, yeah, it was me and Stuart doing all that stuff. And then obviously Danny Gill came along. Danny's a great friend, fantastic. And it's always, you know, it was Mike Caswell as well. He was a great friend, a dear friend. And sadly, Mike tragically passed away last year. Mm-hmm. But it's quite funny that, you know, it's kind of gone a bit full circle that me and Danny now are heading up some of the biggest DVD titles that we've done to date with these classic albums. But Guitar Interactive is a subsidiary of Lick Library. Some people know that, not many people do. Some people get confused. And they came to me, God, 7 years ago and said that they were doing it. And the first ever issue, which is no longer available, I did the whole of the techniques thing. I did everything. Mm. It was a Dave Gilmore feature. And I even did a lesson on lap steel. And then obviously as the magazine progressed, other contributors come in. But I tried to stay away. I'm not really into reviews for two reasons. First of all, that's not very good at it, which I think is the main thing, you know. Yeah. What's this? It's a guitar lead and you plug it in. And, but it sounds good, so I'm not very good at that. And secondly, I sometimes find that I can be a little bit too honest and some people can get upset, and it's not being disrespectful. Also, I'm endorsed by a guitar company. I'm endorsed by Mesa Boogie. You know, I'm with Demarzio, I'm with these great companies, so it's kind of, I don't feel too good about reviewing. If it was a company, I kind of, I get involved a bit with Dunlop. So there was some Dunlop pedals a little while ago. I did some stuff on, and some Wampler stuff. I do a little bit of things with Wampler. So if there's a connection and it doesn't tread on anyone's toes, pedals I think are a different thing. But when it comes to guitar, can you review this Ibanez or something? Or, you know, I did a Wolfgang, which I think I must have been... a bit desperate for money to take those reviews at the time, because obviously this great product, but yeah. you could kind of look at it and raise your eyebrow because it's kind of close to Music Man. And
yeah.
I did think afterwards, you know, although Music Man understand that I have to put my working musician head on sometimes, I've kind of drawn a line under that. But I've kind of adopted a different role there. I took some time out from the magazine for a while, and I got a little bit lost a few years ago with the music and stuff, and was a bit, you know, I've been doing this a long time. Do I still want to do this? And anyway, I don't know whether it's, you know, settling down and having a family, and my attitude, everything changed. And like I said, finding a balance as well, I think, is important with music. And being trying to make a living as a guitar player, I think you have to juggle a lot of different things to make it work, especially now. Mm-hmm. And so I found a good balance. Luckily, I have a wife that's very understanding. She's worked in the industry, who will go, for God's sake, go on tour. So I can go and do the tour, and then I can come back, and I've got my studio. So I get a mixture of things. And I think since doing that, I've become a lot more positive and very excited about guitar again in the last sort of 3 or 4 years. Seem to have an inclination towards being able to imitate people to a certain degree. I'm by no means, you know, some guys I can't even go near. Mm. I did a few books years ago for Sanctuary. I did Giants of Rock, Giants of Metal, and Crash Course Electric Guitar, which were music sales. They're now music sales, and they were like little tracks that sounded like other artists. And I was doing that stuff for Guitar Techniques magazine sort of back from, I think I joined them in about 1995, 94. And I ended up, you know, trying to do sound alikes and really got into it, and gradually got into doing the backing tracks and stuff. And I'd always done recording and, you know, got into doing the drum programming. And that's the thing that people don't understand. When you see my tech sessions in Guitar Interactive,
yeah.
I play the bass, I do all the keyboards, I do the drum programming, I do all the mixing, I do all the music transcribing, I type up the article, everything.
Yeah.
It's not just the backing track doesn't, and I compose the songs, but I really enjoy it. This current issue at the moment, I've done a Metallica one, which I think is one of my best I've ever done. Is managing, the key is to try and touch on the things that get people to go, oh, hang on, is that? You know, I had one, I did a track for Mesa Boogie, which has been a huge track for them, and we called it Ed's Boogie. And I basically did a Van Halen alike, and it was great because they put it on Facebook and Guitar World shared it, and it's had so many views on Facebook, quite a medium amount on the YouTube, not that great, but on social media it's like reached over 1 million people, the guys from Boogie were saying, and it was the biggest viewed video for Guitar World the week it was released. And one guy wrote on there, he was like, oh, he can't even play the this Van Halen song's wrong. And I was like, I really like that comment, because and everyone else was like, dude, it's not actually it's a play on a song.
Yeah.
Is it? Oh, wow. So it kind of made me feel quite good, because he was like, oh, yeah, this dude sucks. He can't play Hot for Teacher properly. And it's like, because it's not. But it had, so I think it's quite important to have to be able to touch on those things that grab people's, yeah, is he doing that riff? No, actually, it's not that. And I kind of have I've got quite good at it. Without, I don't know, well, maybe I've got good at it. I must do, because I keep doing them now. And so I've sort of landed that role a bit at Guitar Interactive. We've got a new editor now, and Jonathan's a fantastic guy, and he's really proactive. And so I've also invested in some cameras. Yep. My friends at Zoom helped me out, get some little, I only got a little cheap, not cheap, but you know, I haven't got like really full-on cameras. I got some Zoom Q8s, and I went on eBay and bought like a lighting kit for you know, €50 or something. And first video sucked, second video didn't suck so much, and in the end I discovered how to light my room. I see, who really inspired me for this was Pete Thorne, because Pete Thorne, by the looks of things, I can't be sure, but his room on YouTube looks pretty small. Mm. But he uses that space very well. I've got like a room, I've got a great man cave where I live, and it's packed with gear, but it's not a great big space. Mm. But the way I've set it out, I've utilized the space. And so with the camera angles right, maybe, you know, you can get it looking pretty good. And that was another thing as well, learning to film, well, not learning to film, but learning how to light and do the video positioning. So now my role in GI has become, it's writing a song that touches on all of those elements of something that you associate with the guitar player.
Yep.
It's then programming a drum track. So then you've got to come up with drum parts that are reminiscent of the drummer of that artist, mm. the bass parts, keyboard parts, production. I did Tom Petty recently, and I layered up snare samples to try and get that Jeff Lynne sound from Into the Great Wide Open. And I've just done a Steve Morse one. When I'm going back from this tour, as I said at the beginning, going back from this tour, I'm going to fly home and have a few days. I've got some work to finish off, but I've got to mix this Steve Morse track. And I tried to sort of look at that early 90s Southern Steel, coast to coast kind of thing, quite sort of a bit Celtic, bit of country inspiration. Mm. But when he was using like guitar lines with the sort of synth lines and keyboard lines underneath, so I'm sort of trying to get that sort of sound. And I used a Music Man lent me one of the Steve Morse, the proper ones with all the pickups in. Mm. You know, just trying to match the tones. And I've got lots of different gear. I started using one of these Two Notes Torpedo rack units, so it's really good for matching the cabinets, you know, getting certain cabinets that really sort of change the sound of your amp and get it sort of quite close to the original. So yeah, that's my role. And then obviously, you know, you write it, you produce it, you mix it and film it,
yeah,
and teach it and then type it and also transcribe it as well, so writing out the score. So it's quite a challenging job, but it's I've done, you know, I'd like to think now I started doing this in the public eye when I was 24, 25, and I'm going to be 47 this year.
So,
yeah, so it's a long time. And also it's quite funny because you kind of see comments on YouTube, oh, you got fat, you got old. It's like, yeah, but you were just watching a video of me when I was like 30, you know, you know, your whole sort of, most of my adult life has been captured on Lick Library. You can see me grow up. It's pretty funny.
Yeah. Well, that's good though. It gives everyone an insight to, you know, what you do there, because, you know, a lot of people see it, you know, even like a 3-minute clip or something, don't realize how much is involved. Like you say, recording it and videoing it.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Well, if you think about it, it will take a couple of days to do the track.
Yep.
I normally spend a bit of time researching a track, having a listen, going, oh, that's good. Oh, I like that bit. I like this idea. Right now, I've got to come up with something. Would he play like this? Would he do that? Or she do that? And then go, okay, right, that's the part. Right, now let's sit down with the drum program. So I open that up, and then that might take an afternoon or an evening of sitting there, coming, listening to track. Oh, there's those kind of fills. And I remember doing Dream Theater and doing all these mic port. I watched that's quite interesting. I did a Dream Theater alike that I've actually redone, that I use on my Mesa Boogie clinics. And when I did it, it was kind of a working of a Rotomania and the Shattered Fortress and a few other tunes that I really liked. And I watched some sections of a Mike Portnoy instructional video.
Oh, really?
To get some chop. Yeah. And I was watching, he was explaining these licks. As he was explaining them, I was writing them in. Because when I program my drums, I draw it in on a grid.
Yep.
I don't sit there pushing buttons. I because I read music, so you lay it out like that. And I literally watched some Mike Portnoy, you know, check out this double pedal lick and this, you know, and lifted some of the licks. And when you listen to it, the drums, even though they're programmed, it has that kind of vibe to it.
Ah, cool.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah. So now for people wanting to get onto the interactive magazines, so it's all online.
Yeah, you just go to iguitarmag.com and it's free.
That's free.
That's a free magazine. Yeah, it's a free magazine. I think if you buy the app, the iPad app, you have to pay for it. Mm. If you go on a browser, you can read it for free. I think all you have to do is register. And I think that the content of that magazine is columns and lessons, there's features, there's video interviews. This issue, now, we've got Kirk Hammett and Joe Satriani in the same issue. Yeah, and those are exclusives. They're not bought from anyone else. So, I've known Steve Morse for a number of years, and I did some stuff with Steve Morse for Guitar Techniques back in the 90s, we first met. And I met him when I signed to Music Man, and I went out to California. And I went at a NAMM show. They invited me, and they flew me out there, and got to hang out with him. And then we did this thing a couple of years later for Guitar Techniques. And then we did a thing about 2012 for Guitar Interactive, and we played together. And it was when we played together that we really struck up a friendship.
Yeah.
And then he played Stockholm with Deep Purple a year or so ago, just after my daughter was born, and he invited me and my wife down with the baby, and then Deep Purple came to play in Stockholm just a few weeks ago, and Music Man said, "Oh, would you do a feature?" And Steve was like, "Oh, you know, get Jamie to do it." So we went down, and I've got a very special guitar here, courtesy of Music Man. I took that down. Because it's basically my 20th anniversary guitar. They built me a one-off signature guitar. It's the only one, but it's mine. It's what I envisaged the guitar. And I took it down for Steve to see, and you know, Deep Purple are rehearsing, and he's like, "Come up on stage, man, plug in." And I'm like, "Get his rig." But we've just done a big video interview. The same issue is the next issue with the Steve Morse tech session. So, you know, we get some great players, very current players, some classic players, and it's a great magazine, and it's free.
Yeah, that's amazing. That'd be excellent.
Yeah, all right, man. Lovely.
Thanks, right, Jamie. Nice to talk to you. No worries.
Speak to you soon.
See you later. Bye-bye. Bye-bye. So I hope you guys enjoyed the interview with Jamie. Yeah, it was really great finding out all about the magazine, and it's free, so make sure you head on over. Again, it's in the notes below, so you can click on that and check out some of the magazines. So make sure you join me next week, where I interview Frank Gambale. And then the week after that, I'm actually interviewing one of my old guitar teachers, Nick Halleck. So Nick actually gave up the music career in about 2000, I think he said it was. And since then, he has gone on to become a multimillionaire with his property investments. His book called The Thrillionaire. He's actually got a new book coming out in April. He's an extreme adventurer. He's a keynote speaker. He's a civil and astronaut. He's done everything. Really look forward to interviewing Nick and finding out all about what his music career and also what he's up to now. So until next week, keep jamming.